97.5 The Fanatic. Devon Gibbons.
How do you not hear when I go off on this team? I don't need to do it every night. I do it often because especially those games that they lose in a row where I say it's disappointing, it's unacceptable. Brett Brown was going to lose his job if he doesn't get this team to the NBA Finals. If they don't get to the NBA Finals, the season was a failure. You didn't hear all of that? You didn't hear any of that?
Joe Torty.
What exactly have Simmons, Embiid, and the Sixers under those two guys done to merit your ridiculous for even talking about these guys in any kind of trade discussion? Like, what have they done that makes them so freaking untouchable that if you even mention either one of those guys, there's like this collective shudder and an eye roll?
The Crossover, right now on 97.5, The Fanatic.
What? What time is it?
Oh, hey!
801, what's going on? Joe Torty. As we broadcast from the Xfinity studio, only from Comcast, Josh Brabick producing the show. JT, what's going on in here? It's a Monday. What's happening?
It is a Monday.
What's happening?
We have it on lockdown. Josh and I have taken care of everything. I have gone so insane with these like Purell wipes all over this studio.
Great.
You are as safe as you could possibly be.
It was the daddy in that deal.
Yeah, exactly.
I trust you. So yeah, I'm not worried about that.
All right. Yeah. I don't come to work sick.
Yeah,
I barely come
here
to work
first. You in here second. I'm not worried about you guys.
Yeah,
not at all. It's all
happen.
Good, man. What's happening? It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's good. The switcheroo is strange.
It is.
It's very strange.
And I was a little busy.
Yeah.
You know, had some things to do. Full disclosure, I was supposed to do the Sixers Foundation Gala.
Uh-huh.
For the first part and then come in, talk about that with you and everything.
Yeah.
But as you know, with the Purell wipes, they wiped down that whole gala.
And they bleached it right out.
They bleached it right out.
That thing's done. Yep.
We'll see when that is back. But unfortunately, we'll see what happens. But good to be here with you.
Yeah.
Of course, as always.
Yeah. So I got to ask you this, D, because I've been talking to people about it. Do you think that this whole thing, as it's related to sports, is a big deal? Like, do you think that, like,
with the coronavirus?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you think?
Well, first, let's tell everybody we're going to have a guest at 8:10.
Oh, yeah, at 8:10.
So at
8:10,
we have a guest coming up, and that is Yaron Weitzman, who wrote a book on the Philadelphia 76ers, Joe, and their rebuild.
It's coming out next week.
And it's pretty popular.
Yeah.
And it's talked about quite often around NBA circles. He's from Bleacher Report, and his book is on the Sixers, and their rebuild is called Tanking to the Top, and it's a really good one. Here it is. Tanking to the Top, the Philadelphia 76ers in the most audacious process in the history of professional sports. So we'll speak to him at 8:10 to find out what is what about the book, everything that is in there, and see, you know, what feathers he might have ruffled when he was doing this. And Sam Hinkie, did he talk to him, and all kinds of stuff. And that should be a good conversation.
That's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to that.
8:10. So, are people overreacting to the coronavirus?
Yeah. Like, would you stay away?
I would still go to the games.
You would? Okay.
I would. Now, the only drawback would be, of course, we have children.
So right, exactly.
Do you obviously you think about them first and foremost when you do anything, and that would be my one reason of, all right, I'm not going.
Yeah.
If they're like, yeah, Dad, I don't know. Can't you do the game from back and watch TV, take your notes and all that stuff? Do you need to go to the game? Well, technically, I don't have to tonight. So, okay.
Right. Tonight.
I'll stay back.
All right.
But if everyone's cool with it, I mean, I know I take care of myself, and I hope that others take care of themselves.
No, that's a silly hope.
To prevent them, you know, I'm not trying to be naive about it, but yeah, I would still go. Do I think they're overreacting? No, I don't think they're overreacting.
Okay.
Because we haven't seen anything like this in quite some time.
Right.
So you have to take all measures possible and to make sure that you, again, protect yourself. They protect everyone because it's about protecting your fans and
yeah,
making sure everyone is okay, where you're not putting anyone in harm's way in a 20,000-seat arena that we know sells out here every single game. I understand it. And so same with other cities and their games and their teams. Also, I don't know if hockey has said anything, if the NHL has said anything.
There was a joint statement made about closing the locker rooms to the media. The NHL were a part of that. It was Major League Baseball, the NBA, Major League Soccer, and the NHL.
Okay.
So they're all kind of treating it the same way.
All right. So how do you feel?
I mean, for me, here's what I look at it, D. I think that
in my headspace, if you're sick, you don't come to work.
I'm always with you there.
Right? But people don't think of that. They think of it two ways, right? One, it's like, oh, I'm a warrior. I can do the job. You know, I don't want people to have to pick up my slack or whatever. Not knowing that, like, if you get the entire office sick, the whole thing shuts down. But, like, the other part is, and I actually empathize with this a little bit, some people can't afford not to go to work. Like, some people are like, I cannot miss a shift. There's just no way that I can do that. I don't agree, but I understand where you're coming from. I think it's the same thing with opening day tickets, or if you have, you know, Flyers tickets you bought way back and now they're on a 9-game win streak. I think in some people's minds is like, hey, I spent this money. You know, I already made this commitment. Not going to be able to get refunds, likely. Not going to be able to get ticket vouchers, although you should be able to. I agree with Marcus Hayes on that one. But I do think that there are some people that look at it and they're like, yeah, I'm going to go sick. Like, I already spent the money. I already did. Bad.
That is bad.
Makes me angry that you would think that way. But teams obviously think that that could be the case as well.
Yeah, that is very bad.
Terrible.
Very bad. I'm all for, hey, I'm not feeling well, I'm not coming in. And when I do, if I come in and I feel even a little bit of something and I had something, I always make sure I wipe these things down. When I was seducing and I was sick because I wasn't on a mic and you didn't have to worry about hearing my voice and all of that, if I felt like anything, I wipe those keyboards down. I wipe the board down, the microphone stand, the phones, everything, just to make sure that I'm not infecting anybody else with whatever I may have at that point, whether it's the flu, strep throat, or common cold, whatever it is. Yeah, I'm always looking to protect. So,
well, and here's the problem, right? If you see people on the street, you'd be like, okay, that guy's sick. Like, the person's sweating or like whatever. At a sporting event where everybody's drinking, everybody's hot, everybody's got 15 layers of clothing, you never know. Like, you would not be able to find, oh, are you sweating on me and you're just gross? Or are you sweating on me and you're infected? Like, you'd have no way of knowing. So, I don't know. For me, I could understand the people that would not want to risk going to an event.
And look at the simple stuff. Look at the simple stuff of you're at an arena, you're at an event, the games, and someone behind you is just coughing.
Right, you're like...
And normally you'd be like, all right, I mean, hey, you gagging, you know, all this, you know,
you're all right.
You cool back there, you need some water.
Now you're like,
all right, I'm out.
Yeah. Dude,
that's not what you want to deal with.
I shook somebody's hand at the Palestra the other day for senior night for Penn. And I thought about it for like the 25 minutes that it took me to get to the bathroom. Like, you shook somebody's hand, man. Like, that was a big mistake. Like, literally, that's the mindset that we're in right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's tough. But
just about scrub my hand off.
I've heard, of course, the first thing was the doctors, all the doctors were going to have the conference call today around the NBA to have a sit down and talk about what measures they need to take. Then the league coming out over the weekend with Wojnarowski and Zach Lowe, all the things coming out then. And then today, the same deal where these guys are talking about now the Board of Governors and the owners, of course, are all getting together to try to figure things out and see exactly what they need to do. And what was the one thing that everybody talks about the last time there were no fans, the Baltimore Orioles game?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if this continues like they think it will, I mean, Joe, you're talking playoffs, right? Revenue in that way.
Yep.
Are you gonna push games back? Things of that nature? What is the NBA going to do?
That's happened overseas. I mean, the Japanese Baseball League did that. I think, was it Swiss Hockey Leagues have done that? Like, there are two that have done it. So, other teams are doing it. I don't know if you move around NBA, NHL. Like, I just don't know. Like, it might be the responsible thing to do, but it's not what we've seen so far. Look, not to go too far off the rails here. You saw, like, what looked like a fairly open and shut conversation in China about, like, what happened with the...
Yes.
And there were a whole lot of people in the NBA who were like, well, hold on, wait a second here on this.
Right.
There's a lot of money to be lost here. Like, and so it's the same thing. I don't think they're going to shut things down if there are still psychos that are willing to go.
But they're going to have every kind of talk that they need to have in order to make sure they do things the right way.
Yes.
Not only to protect their players and everyone, the officials and coaching staffs and medical staffs and all that's included, but the fans as well. This is a family game that they always promote, the NBA. They're going to make sure that they protect the fan base as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, on the line, as promised, joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast, We are joined by Yaron Weitzman, who is from Bleacher Report. But right now, I mean, I always love reading way back from Slam and things of that nature when he was at Slam. I have friends there as well. So, but Yaron has wrote a book, and I think it really hits home for us here at home in Philadelphia. It is called Tanking to the Top, the Philadelphia 76ers, and the Most Audacious Process in the History of Professional Sports. Yaron joins us again on the Comcast Business Hotline. Beyond Fast, and Yaron is an NBA writer from Bleacher Report, joining Joe Torti and Devon Givens. Yaron, thanks so much for joining us here tonight, man. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I love the Slam Magazine reference. That's great.
Oh, of course,
man.
You got some buddies over there. So, you know, I've been following you for a long time, and it's great to see you still doing great work. And I'm very interested in this book, and it comes out on March 17th. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's correct. Better for quarantine reading, for quarantine time?
That's right. You can sit at home while you watch the game and read the book. No question. Well, you're wrong. Listen,
exactly.
We got to start, man, right at the top, tanking to the top, as you call it. One of the more different ways of rebuilding a team, and just to be honest with you, I was not a fan of it, and I refuse to say the process, and I always call it the rebuild, but I only say it because of your book. But what was it about this particular rebuild that made it so interesting for you to decide to write a book as you did?
I just find it so, listen, part of it is like I learned, and you know, part of it is the reason you write a book is because I thought there was an opportunity there, and you know, I wanted to get an extra, you know, financial books thing, all that stuff, right? So I'm not going to be all, you know, I'm not going to be all altruistic about it. That said, you know, when you dive into it, and like I kind of joked that I went into this thinking I was going to write like Moneyball 2.0, which was very silly, and I ended up writing more about palace intrigue, and just I kind of think the Sixers and the process and all of this, if you want to learn about how the NBA works, I think this sort of represents a lot of it in terms of how the dynamic between teams and agents and superstars and owners and the league office and who's in charge and power. And I think it's all kind of represented in this story. And I ended up, you know, I learned it's a good thing, right? It's almost, as a writer, one of the best things is when you go into a story, a book, a project, you're thinking it's going to be X, and it turns out it's Y, and it's Y because you learned a ton. And I learned a ton throughout doing this. And, I think that's what I found most interesting, how it kind of illustrates the way power and the way things work in the NBA.
Well, Yaron, this has probably been, the process and the Philadelphia 76ers have been things that have been tied probably more closely than any other concepts in sports. And it's gotten to the point where here in Philly, people know the story so well. They can rattle off the names. They can rattle off the players. They know exactly who it is. How much more is there to learn? How much is there behind the scenes that you uncovered beyond the surface that kind of everybody knows?
No, a ton. You got to buy the book and learn all these new things that
Absolutely.
You didn't know before. No, but, but no, it feels like the major strokes are the same, right? You know this basic story. Draft Joel Embiid, Sam Hinkie comes in. That's on order. You know, Brian Colangelo, all this stuff. No, but I have some good stuff. I got some good stuff in there, if I may say so. You know, whether it's how the Joey Okafor saga is sort of what broke the straw that broke the camel's back and led to the end of Sam Hinkie, to some of the things, you know, we talk about Brett Brown now and some of the things we see, maybe some of the troubles he's had in Philly, kind of go back to, and it's not all on him, but the idea that stars need to be, or players need to be held accountable for their actions. And again, it's a two-way street, so I'm not putting it all on him, but some of those issues go back to, you know, Nerlens Noel when he was a rookie and like holding team flights, and Jason Richardson, a veteran, mm-hmm. sitting on the flight saying, I know when I'm holding the plane for no rookie, and Nerlens Noel coming in late and no one's saying anything to him.
A lot.
Exactly. So Nerlens, I feel bad. Nerlens gets taken out a lot in this, probably unnecessarily, because he represented a lot. And like, he did nothing to me, but just, unfortunately, it's just the way the story is. Yeah, no, there's a lot of these things that happened. I keep pitching myself to you guys if I want.
Well, you're on. All I know is if the Markelle Fultz real story is in there, everybody's going to buy like 6 or 7. So you just need to be aware of the influx of sales when that word gets out.
There you go. I mean, I got stuff, you know, like the Fultz story is a great example of like, we still don't really know what happened, and I'm not going to, you know, I think there are some story details I have where they're, you know, the way it was explained to me is his mom sort of made him, Markelle, choose between his best friend and her, mm-hmm. right? There were some things that in the circle. Markelle, I guess the way to explain Markelle, and this was interesting to me, right? The way to explain Markelle is he was not like Ben Simmons, where he was groomed to be a number one pick from the age of like 12. right? He's somebody who, at the age of, I think, a sophomore, still playing JV basketball, quickly became a number one prospect. Being thrust into the fame and with that sort of spotlight, it's difficult. It's hard. It's the same thing, right? You see it with celebrities all the time. Basketball is no different. And, you know, there are issues where, the way it's explained to me, like, you know, Markel had to fire his best friend, who was his manager, at his mother's behest. Other stories like that, the Sixers, I got a good story about Mark Eversley, who's a Sixers executive, who was one of the driving forces behind the decision to trade up for Markel, calling up Keith Williams, who was Markel's coach and trainer years back, basically saying this is not the, this is not the bleeping kid we drafted. Stuff like that.
I cannot wait to read this.
I got some Markel stuff in there.
I cannot wait to read this.
Yeah. And
there you go.
We can talk more off air about all this stuff because, yeah, this would be fun. But definitely, Yaron Weitzman from Bleacher Report joining us here on the Comcast Business Hotline. Beyond Fast, tanking to the top, the Philadelphia 76ers in the most audacious process in the history of professional sports. And Yaron, if we start with that and everything that you just named, so many things, and we haven't even gotten to the guy who really started this, which was Sam Hinkie. And Sam Hinkie disappeared, of course, after Brian Colangelo took over, and we have not seen him since. How much did he cooperate, if at all? And just as you explain that as well, what were your thoughts after you answered the Sam Hinkie part of the rebuild from the very beginning, started by Sam Hinkie?
Sam Hinkie did not cooperate. It was fun. Sam Hinkie, the way he phrased it to me, I spoke to him a couple times, and the way he phrased it to me is, I'm not interested in talking about my legacy, and I want you, if people ask you, you know, did Sam participate on background? And for those who don't know, background means, you know, you can use the information, but not attribute it to the person. So when you see stuff like, you know, according to sources, that's on background. So he said to me, when people ask, did Sam participate on background? I want the answer to be no. And he wasn't saying that like as a wink, wink. That was like, well, how, you know, he was very, that's what ended up happening. So, and the word cooperate is funny because I get, like, I don't blame him, right? Like, there's no reason, like, it's not, he doesn't owe me anything. Like, it doesn't owe me to talk to me about the book, so that's fine. But yeah, no, this is, Sam would go so much as, like, you know, if I reached out to a friend, and I have an interview scheduled, and, you know, it's supposed to be 1 o'clock, and I call the guy at 1 o'clock, and he doesn't respond, and I text him, and he says, oh, I'm going to actually not be able to do the interview. And the reason I would find out is because Sam had called him and told him, I don't want you talking to the reporters. So yeah, the participation was non-existent. So what was the second question? My thoughts on the whole rebuild?
Yeah, just the rebuild in general. And as you said, it was something interesting to write about. And from the very beginning, what were your thoughts about it from afar?
From afar, I always, that's a good question, right? I almost just like forget like what I thought before I do things and then after. From afar, if I go black and white, I thought it made sense. Just the idea of just having a plan, like the way I kind of phrase it is, if in the NBA, if you have a plan, you stick to it, you're ahead of the curve. So many of these teams go back and forth. And like I joke, I'm based in New York and the Knicks have lost 20 years in a row without having a plan to do so.
Right.
So,
yep.
You know, and like the funny thing is the Sixers, I believe in the 3 years or 2.5 Hinkie was there, I think they only finished with the worst record once. Like, so plenty of teams lose as many games, not on purpose. But that being said, there were definitely mistakes made along the margins, both from a strategic standpoint in terms of team building and also from, you know, the ability from like a political standpoint of Sam Hinkie keeping his own job. Like, I don't think he put enough, and it sounds funny, I don't think he cared enough about that, which in the one way sounds altruistic, but another, if you put it another way, like if you believe you're the guy to help a team, like part of that means staying in power, staying employed, and he did not do enough to do that as well.
And Yaron, you know, timing's everything. So the release of this book should be coinciding with either a Sixers title or running up to a Sixers title. That's obviously not the way that things have gone. As best you can tell, why hasn't it worked out that way? And why isn't the run up to the release of the book also a hyped up Sixers playoff title favorites run here?
I know, I got to change the title, right? Like tanking through 4 straight second round exits or something. they're not quite the same ring. That's a good question. It's like there are 10 different answers. I mean, one of these is I think there were mistakes made this offseason just from a team building standpoint. The Horford deal, I think we can say not great. Swapping out Jimmy Butler and JJ Redick for Horford, not great. Maybe maxing out Tobias Harris, who's a really good player and a really good guy and a good locker room presence, but $35 million is a lot, whatever the exact number is.
Yeah.
And they've lost a lot of flexibility, and they bet on big and bully ball and, you know, league where space and threes are kind of the thing. And I'm you know, I would love to, I don't know the answer to, like, I would love to know the complete order of operations to Horford out, Horford in, Butler out, Redick out, like how that all kind of came about. We all have hints, we have some ideas, but I would just love concrete answers to that. That part of it, they somehow used up every, like, say what you want about Hinkie. The war chest was full when he left, and they somehow used up, I think, pretty much every asset, which was not great. A lot of it was on a Tobias Harris trade, which they gave up a ton. They gave up a ton for, right? It was Shaman and two firsts.
Yes.
It's kind of like, it's like death by a thousand wounds, right? You have an ownership group that has decided to become more involved and influential in basketball decisions. You have some of the, you know, Embiid probably hasn't taken his, I shouldn't say probably, I think it's fair to say, right? Conditioning has not been a priority for him, right? Which is a little disappointing just as a basketball fan, somebody who wants to see great players play great, right? You would love to see him come back 30 pounds lighter this summer. So you've kind of mixed all these things together. Ben Simmons refusing to shoot a three, which at this point seems like a secondary issue because there are so many other issues in terms of fit and on the court, but it would be nice if he was willing to do that. Unfortunately for them, there's no simple one answer, right? It's kind of like seven different things that have all coincided, and you get this team that is still good and playoff bound, and God, I would never predict anything about them, good or bad, because I have no clue, right?
Just take home and away.
It's a Jekyll and Hyde team, but it is not looking like the championship thing will happen this year.
Yaron Weitzman joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Tanking to the Top is a new book coming out next week, March 17th. And he joins us right now on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. And Yaron, out of everything that you have in the book, and you have so many great details, you shared a little bit here. So I do have to ask this, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Of all of the information that you were able to gather, and not giving away, of course, anything, because it's still just going to entice people to buy the book anyway. One thing that really surprised you in your research that you had to do for this book, that you were just simply like, wow, okay.
I'll give you one surprise. Like, it doesn't matter in the long run. I just thought it was funny. Like, the Brian Colangelo post-Burnergate helped convince Jimmy Butler to choose the Philadelphia 76ers. It kind of happened at a birthday party for Jimmy Butler's agent, who Brian Colangelo's friends with, too. I found that fascinating. It's one of these things that with Butler leaving, it's just a blip in the story, but just, I don't know, just an interesting little detail.
That is interesting.
I was just like, oh, right? A little weird. Like, I would love to know the why there. Surprising. I'm still surprised that, at all the names of the Burnergate. Like, I love, try explaining to a fact checker how uncombed sources is not a typo, but actually what the word's supposed to be. Okay. That's not fun. Yeah, a little bit. What I'll do is, like, I've mentioned, I've done a few of these interviews, and it's probably not going to do me any good in terms of being around the Sixers anymore. But CEO Scott O'Neill, the role he had in kind of pushing out Sam Hinkie was made more clear to me than I realized. And that was definitely a surprise.
And one final one before we let you go. Those are interesting. How about this one? Did it work?
It'll work. If I'm going simple, I say yes. I know if you're not, you said you're not a process fan, right?
Yeah, but I was able to separate, you know, what he was doing versus my own personal belief of how to build a team. So, so I'll just ask you again. You said yes, and you believe so.
Yeah, the math is, like, you know, it was three bad, you have to give the exact number, three bad years, right? Four, and now we're about year number three. We'll probably have at least three more, you would assume, right? I was like, I'll call it contention.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they don't win the championship. I don't know. But if you're a Sixers fan, like, you're watching the game every night, aren't you? The game matters, the team matters, the players matter, everyone cares. You're in title contention. That's kind of the thing you want as a fan, I think. Like, that's the goal. It's almost like you want to be interested in your team, and care, and the Sixers matter. And because of, I mean, yeah, there are other ways to have gotten there, but the decisions that Sam Hinkie made, it got them Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, those guys matter, the team matters, they're good. The math will probably be, about eight good to three bad, right? If I go simple like that, I would take it.
Yeah. Okay, man. Well, listen, this has been fun. It's been great information all around. And again, the name of the book is Tanking to the Top, the Philadelphia 76ers and the Most Audacious Process in the History of Professional Sports. It comes out next week, March 17th. The author of the book, Yaron Weitzman of Bleacher Report, does great work. And where can we get this book? We already know the art. You can pre-order. Is that correct?
Yes, pre-order everywhere, right? Amazon, deliver it right to your door. I'm sorry, I know we're not supposed to promote Amazon, right? So anyone, they'll deliver it right to your door for your quarantine. It'll be perfect. But yeah, you can pre-order, you can buy it. anywhere books are out. If you want, I can send you, if you send me proof of purchase, I can send you what we call a book plate, which is pretty much just a sticker I can sign with any message, and I can put it inside your book. So give it a pre-order. I think if you're a Sixers fan, I think you'll enjoy it.
Yaron, thanks so much for your time, man.
Really appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right, man. Talk to you soon. Thank you so much, Yaron Weitzman. Joe, we can rip apart that on the other side a little bit.
A lot to get into there, man.
A little bit. That is Joe Torti. I'm Devon Givens. Josh Rabick is producing the show. That was Yaron Weitzman of Bleacher Report with a lot on, of course, the rebuild by the 76ers. The name of the book, again, Tanking to the Top, the Philadelphia 76ers, and the most audacious process in the history of professional sports. We'll talk about what you just heard on the other side. We encourage you to call in 610-632-0975. Joe Torti, Devon Givens here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
Oh, we're back. Devon Givens, Joe Torti, 97.5. The Fanatic. Josh Rabick is also here. Capitals not showing up. They're in Buffalo, yes? Not showing up in Buffalo.
Oh, good.
So that's good. We like
Continue.
That. Yeah, we're big fans of that. Stay home for fear of the virus. They're down 2-0 about halfway through the game.
Oh, light bulbs don't work in the scoreboard, eh, bud?
That's exactly right. So much to get into. And I mean, I don't even know if we should reveal what we were just talking about during the break. Maybe that's something for a little later in the program. But for now, let's go back to what Yaron was talking about and kind of the lead up to, you know, the release of the book and what's happened with the process and tanking to the top or to the fourth straight second round exit or
that's
whatever.
What he said.
You know, as you look at it, I thought it was super interesting to me that he picked out that it doesn't matter necessarily that the plan was really good if there were mistakes made here. And it doesn't take very many to throw the whole thing off. And I get the impression that, you know, we can highlight what those might be, but getting the stories of those in the book are going to be pretty good, Devon, I think.
Yeah, and the one thing that he said at the end is tough because you know how we're up against the clock a lot of times for our breaks and we have to squeeze some things in. So when he says exactly what he said about Scott O'Neill and all of that, I was with Scott. Again, I was never a big... now, it wasn't about pushing him out necessarily, but when they did, I wasn't mad because...
Well, I mean, you'd almost have... If you want the process to stop, the process and Sam Hinkie are the same.
And we never knew when it was going to stop.
Right, yeah.
Remember, I always say this.
Yeah.
I always say this. He asked for a 10-year contract.
Right.
Who does that? Okay? Who does that?
Well, Brett Brown asked for four guaranteed up front.
Yes, he did. As he should have.
He's like, no.
But a 10-year,
I'm going to lose all these games.
And listen, I give him credit for having the guts to ask Josh Harris and David Blitzen and the rest of the ownership group to ask for a 10-year contract.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, all right, let's be real. You're not going to get a 10-year contract. You may get an extension off of your 4 or 5-year deal, whatever it might be. But 10 years, you're not going to get that. So in terms of the Scott O'Neill thing, and that's why I made it clear to him at the very top, I was not a fan of it, and I'm interested to see what else is in the book. The one thing about Jimmy Butler and Brian Colangelo, I did not know that. Now, there's some things that you know I've talked to you about, I've talked to Pat Egan about, I've said on these airwaves, I talked to Josh about, and Pat texted me right away and was like, he sent me a laughing thing about, dude, you were talking about the Nerlens Noel thing 4 years ago. Yeah, because he was always late. Always holding the plane up. Jason Richardson is a veteran. It was like, who does this? I've been in the league for years. Playoff teams. Who does this? And Scott O'Neill. Scott O'Neill can defend himself. But I was not a fan, as you know, of the rebuild. I did not dislike Sam Hinkie. I was just against the rebuild that he was trying to put out there. And a lot of people say, Devon, what do you want to do? There were a lot of things you can do. Would it have worked?
Obviously.
I don't know. Would it have worked? It's about who's in charge to make those things work. But it's a story that will be talked about for a long time. It's a reason why he decided to write this book. because there are a lot of interesting things that have gone on in the last 7 years with this rebuild.
I hope he didn't take what I said as a joke, because I'm very serious. Like, it was supposed to be 2019 or 2020 when the whole thing was really supposed to come together based on, like, the trajectory of it. So the timing of this book could literally have been perfect.
It was perfect if all the stuff that went on this summer to bring in Horford, re-sign Tobias Harris, mm-hmm. and bring in Josh Richardson, or Jimmy Butler, J.J. Redick remaining here.
Yeah.
Matisse Thybulle, Landry Shamet coming here, because you never moved for for Landry Shamet. Another name that I'm not going to mention, because it's just going to say people you always talk about it. Well, it's part of it, right? With the whole rebuild, it continued a little bit through Brian Colangelo, and there are other names, including Markel Fultz.
Yep.
Jason Tatum. Is also, you know,
of course,
just because,
of course,
it's what it is.
People don't want to hear about Kristaps Porzingis either.
Like, no, they don't
want to. But I
do know that he wrote about that in the book as well.
I cannot wait.
Because I do know about that.
Because people say that he didn't want to work out right for the Sixers. Okay,
right. No, he did not.
Now, you want that guy? So who cares?
I remember that story. He was working out in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. Las Vegas at Impact. That's the famed gym out in Las Vegas, where everyone works out. They have banners of guys like Chauncey Billups, Kyle Lowry, and different names who always make that their off-season workout home. And, of course, they go back to their regular homes. Kyle comes back to Philadelphia. Chauncey goes back to Colorado. They meet up in L.A. also, but Impact is a big deal.
Yeah.
And Kristaps Porzingis was working out at Impact. His agent, who a lot of people did not know, Andy Miller, was Nerlens Noel's agent. So, number one, you may not want your guy to work out because the team is god-awful.
Right.
Number two, he is a center. You already have a center on your roster. Why do you want both of your clients as centers on one team?
So it goes beyond, like, he just doesn't like the Sixers.
Right.
Like, it goes beyond that.
That could very well be true.
Yeah, right.
Right? Andy Miller's not going to say, all right, we'll trade Nerlens Noel so we can bring in Kristaps, because that's his guy. But that's just a little bit of what actually happened.
Sure.
I don't know. I'm sure all of that is in the book as well, but those are some things that went along with that decision in the past when he decided to not work out for the 76ers in Las Vegas.
Okay. All right. He talked about the court intrigue and, like, the drama and, like, the behind-the-scenes stuff. We have been, if you love drama, you have been gifted by the Philadelphia 76ers, because I promise you the Indiana Pacers are not like this. Like, there are teams that you do not get stuff like this. Or you don't get stuff like this for a very long time, right? Like, Oklahoma City was that team for a while, and then they crammed it all in like a 3 or 4 year period, right? So, like, this is, it's going to be a cool look. But it does make you go back and think, even if you agreed with, like, the tanking, and if you agreed with that's the best way to accumulate assets and things like that.
And he did.
All of the things that kind of went wrong. It doesn't take very much, and it doesn't seem like the Sixers made very many good decisions at decision points. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Like, at times when you could have gone either way, it seems like, maybe it's just luck, maybe it's scouting, whatever it is. Anytime you had a 50-50 shot, you came up on the other side.
Do you have one that really stands out for you off the top of your head?
50-50 shots?
50-50 shot.
So for me, like, the Jahlil Okafor one, right, there's not really...
There were a few ways you can go there.
You could have gone a couple
because
ways.
Because I think a lot of people were on board with D'Angelo Russell coming out of Ohio State.
It's more why didn't they take Jahlil Okafor? Why did they take D'Angelo Russell instead? Like, that's a coin flip kind of thing.
Okafor went 3, and then Kristaps went 4. Yeah, he went 4.
The other thing is, why did you... I get best player available, but, like, why did you take him at all? Like, you already had Embiid. Like, you're sending the message that you don't think that Embiid's going to be available. And I'm not saying that Hezonja or Willie Cauley-Stein or Emmanuel Mudiay or any of these guys.
Kristaps went 4, right?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
he went 4.
Yes.
I mean, this is not an amazing draft. Like, you had some good players in there. Towns, Russell, Porzingis, Booker.
Booker went 11. 13.
Yeah.
And that's it. And like, there's a bunch of, like, okay guys in there, but, like, that's it.
And if you remember that, see, man, now you're going to get me started.
Sorry. Yeah, didn't mean to.
If you remember that one, that's when they also had an opportunity to get the number 10 pick. No, excuse me, it was top 10 protected. Miami had number 10?
Yeah.
Did they take Justice Winslow
at 10.
Okay, all right. So they took Justice Winslow at 10. If it fell out of the top 10, it was top 10 protected, Miami, the Sixers would have had that pick. And I miss on a lot. We needed to see them identify a shooter. I was all over Devin Booker with that 11, 12, 13 spot. It was,
you mean like right where he went?
Yeah, exactly. Because you were going to get that big man, whatever you're going to get. Even if it was Russell at number one, you still take Booker later on at 10, at 11, 12, 13. Because
right.
Now you're talking potentially of having your backcourt of the future. Or in the event that you still suck and you go out there and you find a way to get the number one pick like they did and wind up with Ben Simmons, and you can now move Russell as an asset and still have Booker as your two guard. So you're thinking of so many things. They missing on the 50-50 opportunities.
Fultz is another one, right? Like,
and I have a thing with Jason Tatum that I've been keeping in my pocket that both you and Josh know about that I want to use as a side topic.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Continue. Yeah.
But I mean, like, in that case, no reason for him. Look, I get if he's not ready to be number one overall pick Markelle Fultz, there's no reason to believe what happened should happen. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so many things like that where it's like, it could go either way. Went the wrong way. That's all.
It's a lot of stuff in there, man. And that book, I'm sure, is going to have a lot of things.
Juiced.
And I'm sure he's not a big, you know, not a lot of Sixer people are fans of.
Oh, really?
I'm just guessing. You know, when you start digging in like this, and I've seen him down there quite a bit over the last couple of years. He's been there, obviously, to do this book.
But you're trying to figure out where the bodies are buried, man. Like, that's tough.
Even with Hanky gone, you're still trying to figure things out because there are a lot of people who are still left over.
610-632-0975, Devon Gibbons, Joe Torti. We are hanging out together until 10. Devon's got you until midnight right here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Devon Gibbons, Joe Torti, 97.5 The Fanatic, hanging out until 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Let's run until 10.
Yeah, we can do that.
Let's run.
Just keep it moving.
Yeah.
And then you'll keep up the pace.
I'll keep up the pace midnight. Until midnight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a fascinating tweet that Josh put out.
Okay.
From the Fanatic Twitter account.
All right.
When you look back on the start of the Sixers rebuild to now, what moment stands out the most to you? Was it a partial success with missteps? Will it be a complete disaster without a championship? So, I'm sorry, we are going to open this can of worms now. The thing that people always said to you when you're like, I hate the tank.
Yes.
Is what? When you're like, I hated the process. What did they always say to you?
This was the best way to do it.
Right. What were you supposed to do?
Yes.
Right?
You were admiring in mediocrity.
Yes.
You were hovering around that fifth, sixth, sometimes seventh seed.
Uh-huh.
And you have no star.
No stars.
You tried to get one with Andre Iguodala moving on to Denver in a three-way deal. Vucevic to Orlando, bringing in Andrew Bynum.
Drew Holiday was
Jason
underrated
Richardson.
With us.
Yes.
He here was. In Philadelphia. Yes. We really underrated
Another
him.
Another reason when it happened, I'm like, I don't want to do that. But I understand you got two draft picks out of it. You cannot really argue that, but you can argue it like I did,
right.
That I like Drew Holiday. Well, he's not. You know, all I would get was he's not this, he's not that. He doesn't have to be the superstar. He can be a star and part of it.
Well, the problem is
now you try to get him back. When I heard him on JJ Redick's podcast the other day, he was like, yeah, I got the phone call from Sam Hinkie, who I had never met. We were driving from a camp back home in Los Angeles. Drew Holiday saying this. I got a phone call saying, Sam Hinkie says to Drew, and I'm taking this verbatim.
Hi, Drew. Nice to meet you.
Best as I can from. He says, listen, we never met. I'm sorry we never had a chance to really talk.
And we're not going
to. We're trading you to New Orleans for the number six overall pick. And Drew said, if you know Drew Holiday.
It's like, all right.
Drew Holiday's like, okay, thanks. and just
click.
Yeah, it just hung up. And that was it. That was their conversation. So,
and his brother's like, who was that?
Yeah, Sam, I just got traded.
I just got traded.
And then it popped up on the bottom line because the draft was going on that night. And then he just kept going and simply said, and then they tried to get me back.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. There was no way.
Right.
There was no way.
Right. Okay, there you go. There you go.
Oh, okay. So,
won't see him no
keep
more.
Keep going, because I, you know I got stuff. So
well,
keep
of
it
course.
Go ahead.
So there's all the things that you just laid out.
All right.
You're in perpetual. You're never going to be bad enough to get a good draft pick, and free agents aren't going to want to come because you don't have any cap space, right? The problem is, and the stars thing matters, right? Not having stars does matter. But you fast forward to today,
mm-hmm.
and you have Embiid, who is a legitimate top five player in the NBA?
You healthy?
Healthy Embiid?
Top, you can argue
as,
top
as he exists, a sure top 10 player in the NBA. And you got Ben Simmons, who is as intriguing as any player in the entire league. Other than that, from a results standpoint, you've got a bunch of contracts that everybody hates. You've got another second-round playoff exit. And the seeding is what's their seed right now, D?
That would be six.
Oh, it's six. Mm-hmm. So it's like kind of exactly where they were before. This is just 1 year,
but you have two stars.
But how long's it been?
You have two stars, and yes, you have two stars.
Okay, all right. Two stars are supposed to attract the third piece. That was the whole thing. The stars are supposed to bring in
that free agent,
the big guy. That hasn't happened.
Well, it didn't happen the way you're saying, but it did happen in the sense of a free agent in J.J. Redick. He was the first one to do it, but you still needed to do better than J.J. Redick after you made the playoffs for 2 years in a row.
Wasn't that like the test case, though? Like, wasn't that you
worked.
Had to pay the guy mega bucks to get him in the door?
Yes, and you know I'm not on board with a lot of things that they did, but I was in favor of that because
he's
a shooter and it worked.
Yeah.
But yes, you're right. Where's the third piece? Even if it didn't come in the form of Jimmy Butler, who's in Miami now,
yep.
keeping him, moving the picks that you moved with Landry Shamet and not getting Tobias Harris, but something a little bit better. No disrespect to him. But hitting on Markelle Fultz.
Makes a difference.
Hitting on Jason Tatum. Just because you agreed to the trade with Danny Ainge and saying we're going to take Markelle Fultz and agreeing to it, does not mean you had to do it.
Well, let me ask you about that.
You can take who you want because you made the deal and you gave up those other assets. You can take whoever you want. Yes, it's, you know, you look at it and you might say that's bad business. No, it isn't, because he fleeced you, didn't he?
Twice.
Wasn't that his goal?
Twice, I would
argue.
His
goal was to fleece you. Now I got you. I'm taking Jason Tatum and let's move on.
So here's what I want to know. People point that out like it's bad business. No one will ever do business with you again. Right? As if the Sixers made a ton of friends with pick swaps and taking on bad contracts and stuff like that. As if.
Oh,
like,
man.
That's all bad business, too. That's all bad faith stuff.
I want to jump in every time you say something.
Right.
Andre Kirilenko.
Right.
Traded from Brooklyn to Philadelphia. He did not want to come here because his wife was pregnant. They were in Brooklyn. He didn't want to. In this situation, he had an agreement. So this is my point. He had an agreement with Billy King. If you remember this, he had an agreement with Billy King that they would not, because would not move on from Andre Kirilenko in the way that, you know, whatever, it was bad business. They traded him for a second round pick.
All right, see ya, AK-47. Okay. Thanks, man.
That's bad business. So what does that do? That messes things up with the agents. And then again, the general manager in Brooklyn, Billy King, is like, yo, we could have just kept him here for all of that. Or
right.
maybe moved him somewhere else where they would have been more comfortable, all of that, and doing the business that you're supposed to do. Well, and that's why I'm saying you could have done it. And even though this is Brian Colangelo
yeah.
and not Sam Hinkie with the Fultz thing, you can do what you want once you make that trade.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Now,
it's
a shame that Brooklyn was unable to attract any other stars after the whole AK-47 bad blood thing. It's a shame they haven't gotten any other good players to sign there, like Kyrie Irving or Kevin Durant. It's a shame. It's a shame that that whole thing didn't happen.
That's why they wanted to trade for guys like Tobias and Jimmy to see if it worked. That was their form of a free agent pickup.
Yeah.
Convince them to stay. You win. Get deep into the postseason. Show them that this is the environment they want to be in for 4 or 5 years. and you go from there, and Tobias Harris is the one that they chose.
If you want to have your blood boil, just do a fun little exercise. And look at all, since the start of the process, look at all of these superstars who have changed teams and which ones are on the Sixers. We should go through that. That'll be a lot of fun, D. All right. I think we should do that.
Okay. You're going to infuriate some people, but let's...
Oh, that's a buzzkill.
Exactly. Thank you, Tom.
Oh, we can move on. We don't need to beat the dead horse, but hey, we'll just take a look.
It's all on board.
We'll take a look real quick. 610-632-0975. The tweets as well. The tweets are coming in fast and furious. We'll get to those as Devon Givens and Joe Torti on the Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back to Devon Givens, Joe Torti, 97.5 The Fanatic. Tweets are coming in before we get back to the phones. Charles tweets in, letting Butler go is a mistake. Trading Bridges on draft night was a mistake. He's exactly what the team's missing. The rest I'm okay with.
Mikhail had a double-double last night.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
20-21-10, I think he had it. I don't know. I was half asleep, but I woke up. And it was
Oh, that's nice. Good job, man. And then you just go back to sleep?
No, I was like, just keep it rolling.
That's awesome.
Won the game is awesome. Dante DiVincenzo played in that game as well.
Josh says that the Suns ruined his five-game parlay, so...
Damn right we did.
Yeah, we. There we go.
That's right.
My friends call me Dom tweets in about the missteps. What moment stands out the most? Firing Hinkie. The league applied pressure, and it's been downhill since. What do you make of it?
I don't necessarily have a problem when people say that just because you did not see him finish the entire thing off.
Right.
But you also don't know when it was going to stop.
Did the team know? Did the team have it?
No, they did not.
In any business proposal, you have five-year plans or three-year plans or whatever, and you have milestones that you have to hit. By this time, we hope to achieve this. By this time, we hope to... That was my issue, is that we never heard...
He never talked about
it. Like, we speculated that the target was LeBron, right? We always speculated that the whole thing was centered around freeing up and building a team such that when LeBron James became a free agent, that's when the team would be competitive. But that didn't come from Hinkie. That, like, came from us being like, that kind of makes sense as to what they'd be trying to do.
Yeah, we never found out who he wanted. What other direction he may have wanted to go. We knew he was not afraid to make moves. Like, the Michael Carter Williams wins Rookie of the Year. They try to boost his value, which it was like, whatever. You know, I think people can see through this around the league. Mm-hmm. Can't play. But on draft night, they draft Elfrid Payton at the number 10 spot, which I was good with because I'm like, I'm not a Michael Carter Williams fan, sure. And I like Payton coming out of the draft. I was wrong about Payton, but... It was more of, I don't like Michael Carter Williams.
Uh-huh.
Sam Hinkie's saying, yeah, we've got the most out of Michael Carter Williams. I
that
will trade
get.
You.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
He's at the draft shaking his hand, Elfrid Payton. He's like, oh, this dude's about to get moved. This is glorious.
And then,
I'm doing a draft show that night. I'm like, yes, keep it going. Give us more.
And then, like, wait, they traded Payton for what now?
Dario Saric. Yeah. Who didn't want to come over.
He's never
going
to come over.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, you can run through all the names, and there are plenty of them.
Dude, what a time. Like, literally.
How many of them were you supposed to hit on, realistically? Let's run them real fast before we get to the phones. Let's run.
How many were you supposed to hit on?
How many of them were you supposed to hit on?
You and I disagree on this.
Okay.
Because you gave a number. I disagree with the number. So go ahead. You tell yours first.
Well, let's just run through the people that they had. First, it was Nolan's Noel. And Michael Carter. If you want to give Michael Carter
first round pick.
He's a top 15 pick.
Yep.
Dario Saric was also a top 15 pick, right?
Think so?
No, yep. he was number 10 or 11, whatever. Number 12, pardon me.
Okay, yep. Yes.
Peyton 10, Sharj 12. They swapped the picks and all that stuff.
Yep, okay.
Okafor, Embiid, Simmons, Fultz, and Zaire Smith.
Yeah.
He counts because Mikal was drafted at number 10.
Absolutely counts.
Yes.
100%.
Okay.
Yep. I say that in order for you to win, you still only need to hit two of those guys.
Okay.
I know you said three.
I said you need to hit on three.
Right.
Doesn't mean that the third one has to be a superstar or even an all-star, but it needs to be a rotational player that they have.
Okay.
And Nerlens is...
Then I would say three.
Nerlens is coming off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Okafor is coming off the bench. Michael Carter-Williams is coming off the bench, still trying to find his way. And yes, I know you can talk about what they got in return, but it's okay to also hit on those players when you have the other players that are surrounding them, drafted around, like you mentioned, Devin Booker. And
yeah.
All Giannis. These, I'm not even going to go all the way. And Giannis, no one knew, so I never really destroyed them on Giannis because who knew
right.
at 15 that Giannis and Antetokounmpo was going to turn into the Greek freak, a two-time MVP, because I think he's going to win this year. Who knew that?
Sure.
It's not my job to know that.
Yeah, somebody
not your
knew.
Job to know that, but somebody's going to take a chance to do that. They took Michael Carter-Williams. Okay, cool. They flipped it the way they wanted to flip
right.
it. But all of these guys are coming off the bench in all of these different places doing stuff in the league, but not on championship teams.
Zaire Smith.
Zaire Smith had a career high, I think, in the G League. So what?
Yeah, great. You know? It's
sorry.
So that's what you look at is the results. And I was always... aware of
and look if you're gonna trade Mikal, give me Dante DiVincenzo.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'm not happy about it, but give me the other guy.
Well, so when you look at it, the Sixers really have not been that good at drafting. They've been good at getting the draft picks. The actual selections have not been great. That's why I was counting on two, and then a big time person. Like I don't. It didn't have to be LeBron. Like if you got Russell Westbrook. I'm happy. If your group is Simmons and Westbrook and Embiid, that's probably closer to where you are championship-wise than right now. You know? No? I know you're not a big Westbrook. I'm just throwing
it
out.
Because I was big on get Westbrook and give him the ball here.
Right.
That's trade those assets and go get Russell Westbrook and give him the ball.
Good plan.
That's what I thought.
Make him James Harden East.
Yes.
Have him do everything on the whole team.
Yes, and you could have also tried to work out a trade to get James Harden.
That would have worked out.
Also, but, you know. Here's my thing about the third player. The third player, to your point, yes, you can try to go out, but there was no guarantee of that. So at least try to hit on that third player with what you have a little bit of control over, which is drafting that third player.
Right, right. But
and you take
if you have control, because, I mean, you really only get who's available. Like, I mean, that's the other part,
yes.
right? So you're not always picking one or two.
Right, and you're not going to hit on everyone. I know that. I'm fully aware of that.
But that's a lot of people to miss on.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people to miss
and
on.
And then you say, okay, the assets and all the stuff that have now come with it, right? All of that, and that's how you go get Tobias Harris, and you do the stuff with Tobias Harris, and you move Landry Shamet. Mikal moves on. You don't take some other people as well. And, yeah, you can do that, but they picked the wrong one. Now, that's this regime. So it's all a domino effect of all of the guys that they've missed and the new people who are now taking over to do it. So that's why I say there needed to be three out of the 15.
How long is this
even
book?
Though, I'm just saying 15. I know it's not really 15, but
this thing could pretty much be like an encyclopedia. And I hope this book is enough pages.
Yeah, check that out. Also, the Brett Brown thing. You know, I was never a big Brett Brown guy.
I do. Yeah.
Has he hung around too long? Was Sam Hinkie going to move on from him at some point?
You bet.
I don't know.
Probably.
You think so? Right.
Right.
He might have.
But if he's going to do it with Michael Carter-Williams, like, you've outlived your usefulness and we're going to move on to something new.
Thanks, Brett.
Right? I mean, I don't know, man. It's still crazy to think about and talk about. Like, I know that we're years removed from when this thing started. Like, it was the 2013 playoffs that, like, started it, right? Pretty much. So, like, it's been, like, 6 years since then. It's crazy.
This is Brett Brown's seventh season.
Seventh season. There you go.
Yep. And so, he came in with the expectations of getting the number one seed in the East, 60 wins in the Eastern Conference, so they can make sure they have home court advantage. Have the best record, so when you do face the West in the home,
you have home court
in the NBA finals. And here we are right now, Some of it is on him. Some of it is on Elton Brand. Some of it is on the players. Some of it goes back to the offseason, right? With Jimmy Butler and J.J. Redick moving on, you giving the money to Tobias Harris, all that stuff.
Let me ask you this about Brett Brown, D, because this is something that came up, and I was talking about, you know my stance, is that if you have all of those years of job security where you don't have to win games, you don't have to develop players and all that kind of stuff, there's a trade-off where you don't get like the grace period that other coaches would get when you're trying to win games and win in the playoffs. That's why I need Brett Brown to be better sooner than maybe another coach in his position. The one part where I kind of feel for Brett Brown is when you're talking about a defense, pace, and space coach coaching for his job in his final season, and you swap out Jimmy Butler and J.J. Redick for Al Horford, that's a tough paper route a little bit.
All right, two things before we get to the phones. Brett Brown and the defense, pace, and space I was okay with. In terms of swapping Butler and Redick and all that, okay, it's also on him to try to get along a little better with a player that is a little bit, I'm not going to say volatile, because Jimmy Butler wasn't necessarily volatile here, but someone who's
offbeat,
more opinionated.
Yes, outspoken.
About his role and outspoken with what he does. That was the case here.
Fair.
They did not necessarily see eye to eye. I'm not saying they got into arguments and all. The only one that really comes out is that Portland thing with the video session that they had. Other than that, he spoke his mind, and that's okay.
Right.
I remember even saying then, I didn't have a problem with it, and it happened. And what was the other one you said with Brown? Oh, the one
he's coaching for his...
Yes, but he also had his hand in making these decisions. The other thing is, here's the only time I was really on Brett's side. Sam Hinkie allowed him to stand up in front of the media, the fans, and be the face of the Sixers when all that bad stuff was going on.
Yeah.
Hinkie was supposed to be out front, not Brett Brown. He had enough on his plate at that time.
Coaching the team.
To coach the team that was terrible, trying to figure out all these different lineup adjustments with these players that play with me at the rec center, mm-hmm. and all that stuff, that he didn't need to be handling that. That was Sam Hinkie. So that's where we talk about the relationships and how things play out overall,
right?
He needed to do better there. That's the only time I felt for Brett. I'm not saying like I hate Brett Brown. I just didn't like his coaching. That's all.
Right.
I gave him his credit for the last couple of years when they won. That's what I'm supposed
50
to
games,
do.
Yeah,
he won
of course.
50 plus games and got him to the second round. Of course, didn't he failed in the second round because they should have won one of those second round matchups between Boston and Toronto. But that being said, I was with him there. Where Sam Hinkie left him hanging out to dry.
I think that was part of his job description during that time.
I don't think so.
I think that's part of it. If you're not going to be actively judged on winning games, then that kind of goes with
When Jahlil Okafor is getting a gun pulled on him downtown,
yeah.
Brett Brown doesn't need to be answering that question.
You're right about that.
When he's speeding over the Walt Whitman Bridge over 100 miles per hour, Brett Brown does not need to be answering that question. When he is in a fight In Boston. I think Christian Wood, who will be in here on Wednesday, who annoys me, with the Pistons, was with him in Boston when he got into the fight. That's not Brett Brown's job to answer that. That's the general manager's job to answer that and fix that problem. It is Sam Hinkie's job to make sure that they speak to the league when the fight goes down in Boston and they find out on TMZ the next morning. That is not Brett Brown's job. That was Sam Hinkie's job.
Sure, he's got some other stuff. He's got some other stuff to be dealing with. You're right about that.
So we talk about all these things, but we forget about that stuff. That was bad stuff. So when Yaron was talking about Nerlens Noel was always late to the plane. Jason Richardson saying, I am not, what are we doing? Joe, he would be 45 minutes to an hour late almost every trip. Every trip.
Well, he's got to go through security, you know.
Well, that's another thing that people didn't know, that he liked
it. Oh, yeah. He did?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
All right. He was in the program.
In the program.
Yes. He was in the program.
Let's go to Kevin and
Michael
Trenton.
Carter went. Never mind. Go ahead.
Yeah, leave that
I'll,
one.
I'll say
for
so.
Now.
I'll say.
What's up, Kev? How you doing, man?
Got me going.
Hey, gentlemen, how y'all doing, man?
Doing great.
This part is just coronavirus, right?
Yeah.
And, man, I don't care what nobody say, man. It's all spread through your currency. The money in your pocket right now. If you got any dollar bills, 5, 10, whatever, 20, people sneeze on money. They cough on money. If I was a mad scientist and wanted to spread a virus through the United States, I know how much people love their greenbacks. That's the way to do it. Mm. And I heard a report that said that this whole thing was created in a laboratory.
The virus?
You're going to hear a whole bunch of different
I have no idea.
Scenarios.
I mean, it's speculation, I know. Yes. But still, I mean, I ain't worried about shaking your hand, man. You bumped me on the shoulder or whatever. Now, I don't care about that stuff, man. I'm worried about if you owe me $20 and you say, well, Kev, here's your $20. I'll say, nah, man, take a rain check on that. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You know what I mean? I see people in supermarkets wearing gloves, plastic gloves. I mean, cashiers, you know. Mm-hmm. It's starting to pick up now, man. This thing is quite serious, man, because they're talking about shutting down schools, quarantines, and all this stuff, man. Wow, man. We are living in the last days. That's for sure. You talk about as far as concerning plagues and stuff like that, you know. But also, man, the Sam Hinkie thing, man, they shut that down too soon, in my opinion. You know what I mean? As far as trusting the process, I think it would have came to fruition if we didn't, you know, Philly fans, I mean, as far as we experiment too much. You know what I mean? When you got a good thing, you keep a good thing. But Philadelphia, man.
What was good?
We were rebuilding. It was a slow process. We were getting there. You know what I mean? So, but I think maybe a year too soon, you know, maybe, you know, you had to give it a chance, man. You know what I mean? We don't want to work anything out, man. We just want to win now at all costs and all this kind of stuff, man. You know what I'm saying?
Well, normally, you know, Kev, I think that I'd agree with you, and thanks for the phone call, man. I hope we're not in the last days. I got a lot of stuff left to do.
Mm-hmm.
But
That was embarrassing, some of the stuff. Go ahead.
The problem that I have is normally I agree. It's like, we were a microwave fan base where it's like time now. The thing that was so remarkable to me about the process was not Devon, but like most people who were around the Sixers from a fan perspective understood and were like okay with it. You know what I mean? The fact that a lot of Sixers fans were like, okay, we'll just like throw seasons down the toilet and try to do it. I was amazed. I was like, I thought that would never, ever happen in this city ever. So I wouldn't say that like, the team or the city or the fans wanted to move on too quickly. I think that there were a lot of people that were in it that were like, all right, as many assets as we can possibly accumulate. Is there a pick swap somewhere that we can figure out here? A god-awful does JaVale McGee have any brothers in the NBA that we could bring on terrible contract? You know what I mean? Like, yes. I think that there were people that were like that more than, all right, this guy's got to get out of here and we got to move on. But the question still is, like, how long are you supposed to wait? Like,
and we will never know, to his point. We will never know.
Maybe he has a great relationship with guys.
Maybe it was too soon. Maybe it wasn't. When some of the we give credit to Sam Hinkie for some of the things that he did. I know I do. I say he collected a lot of assets in terms of those draft picks. And that's amazing to do what he's done with all of those draft picks and accumulating them all. And he was not around to see everything through.
Mm-hmm.
But things after have to hit as well, and that's where Brown and now Brand comes into play. Colangelo certainly with his, and he takes faults over Tatum and all of those things, and then help Jimmy Butler make a decision to come to Philadelphia and saying, okay, yeah, accept that trade. Well, the trade was gonna go down anyway. It was just a matter, I don't think he had no trade clause,
right?
So we would have to read Yaron's book to really get
the meat
more
of that.
On that. Yeah. So it was just a thing that happened. I don't know if, yes, it was a slow build. Of course it was a slow build, because that's why it was deemed what it was deemed when Tony Roten said what he said about it being a process and the team preaching a process to them. But and it always, you know, you always trigger me when you say Tony Roten. It's like, what?
Little twitch
wake
there.
Up in my sleep, Tony Roten. So this is it's tough, man.
Well, so
it's tough because you hate to see them where they are right now with the sixth seed and the talent that they do have with Embiid and Simmons. And you know I wanted J.J. Redick back. I was always up in the air with Jimmy Butler, but I said if they did it, I understand it, and I'm on board with it. I pivoted to what they did by acquiring Horford and Richardson and bringing back Harris. And right now we're probably wrong. We'll see in the long run. But it just doesn't look good right now. Not many people have faith unless they're at home playing games.
So, and it's hard for me to say that, like, for the last thing that he said, the things were going great, you know, when you're not trying to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I got into one of my roommates at college because there was this other guy that we lived with that did not have a successful dating life. But this guy was shooting shots literally constantly. I mean, all day, just like if he saw someone in the cafeteria, would just let it roll, just like over and over and over again. And this guy would get crushed by everybody in our room, be like, man, you have no, you're getting shot down by everybody, you have no success, blah, 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 blah. And I got into him one day, I'm like, you guys aren't even doing anything. Like, he's out there at least shooting shots, putting himself out there, and getting shot down.
Right.
It takes literally nothing to sit back and not do anything. That's why it's hard for me to look at what was going on at the time as a success in and of itself, because it's not hard. Like, it is not hard to put out the worst possible basketball team that you can.
I always said, Joe, I can tear it. I may not be able to get the assets back. I would get some asset because you're going to trade. You're going to get something in return.
You have high draft picks.
I would hope that I would get high draft picks because of whoever's my front office help that we all got in this together.
Yeah.
Draft picks. I mean, we can trade, guys.
It's not hard. Like, it's hard for me to say that that's successful. Successful is trying and achieving something, your goal, whatever that is. In this guy's case, one date, just one time. But for the Sixers, like, if it's supposed to be about a championship or postseason success or even a realistic shot at landing a superstar, if that's what this whole thing was supposed to be about, where are we? Like, how have we done on that so far?
A barrel, 15, Beryl.
Just,
by respect.
I thought you meant like a barrel.
No.
Like a barrel
was
tweeting.
That's what his name is on Twitter.
Okay.
He says, bro, 14 other teams missed on Giannis. Give it up. Well, we said that we're not putting too much on Hinkie because that was hard to predict.
But I look at it the other way, which is like there were lots of things that seemed like good ideas for the Sixers that didn't work out. So that's why I pointed to the Giannis one. It's like, what if they did? What if Sam Hinkie really did take like the shot in the dark and like the long view as he did? Because think about this. Does it make more sense if you're the Sixers to get Michael Carter-Williams and trade him for what you can, which the return was not that great for Michael Carter-Williams.
I don't even remember what
right?
it was
like,
at this point.
I'll read you off the hall.
What was he traded to?
It was the Bucks, wasn't it?
It was Milwaukee.
Yeah.
They got Luke Mbamute back?
I think so. And they got the big pick swap, which they liked.
Okay.
Where was that? Oh, my gosh. It was the three-team trade. The Bucks got Carter Williams, Miles Plumlee, and Tyler Ennis from Phoenix. Sixers received a first-round pick from Phoenix via the L.A. Lakers.
Oh, yes.
It was 1-5 protected in 2015.
Forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
unprotected 2018. Yeah.
Yes.
And that was the pick that they traded, the Markelle Fultz trade-up, actually. My whole point with this whole thing is that if you're truly taking the long view, why would, if you're Sam Hinkie and you think that Giannis can't play, but maybe would be able to play or would have the highest up, why would that not be the guy? Like, if you're
like,
in the
like
middle
Milwaukee
of,
did.
If you're in the middle of tanking and you're trying to be bad, like, that seems like a good idea.
Because Milwaukee, they were also in a rebuild
in that
situation.
Move. Yes.
Boston was in a rebuild situation and they got it ready quicker. By some moves that they made, and Giannis turned out to be who Giannis now is. So
not saying that they should have drafted him, but like it's not outside the realm of possibility with one of their two first-round picks. If you're going to take Nerlens Noel, who was like the consensus number one prospect before he got injured in college basketball, right? And then, like, is it Michael Carter-Williams or Giannis? I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm just saying.
And not having, you know me, not having veterans with those guys at that time always bothered me.
Tony Roden. I did it to him again.
610-632-0975. Mark, Tito, we're going to get to you guys right after this. It's Devon Givens and Joe Torti on the Fanatic.
Oh, no.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
He's Devon Givens. I'm Joe Torti. Josh Rabick producing this evening's program. We're hanging out together until 10 o'clock. Then Devon soldiers on until midnight.
Uh-huh.
Josh has got your back.
When are you back in here?
I work a ton this week.
Do you?
I'm back in tomorrow.
That means I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, that means you don't. I'm in tomorrow. I'm off Wednesday. Back in Thursday. Back in Friday.
All right, well, that means I'm in Wednesday, live from the center.
Yeah.
Before Sixers Pistons. And again, it's a new time change, 7 o'clock, no longer 7:30.
We'll see if you'll be allowed in the arena.
Yes.
We will find out.
I'm doing Sixers and 60 with Brian Seltzer.
Oh, the great Brian Seltzer.
So they have to let me in.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you tell them, you know, B. Seltz. That's, yeah.
I'm good.
You're good.
Absolutely. And then Friday, I'll, of course, be on at 6 o'clock.
Yes. Yes, of course. So that's, it's going to be a fun time here this week. Let's get to the phones. I know people have been waiting. Let's go to Mark in Mount Airy to lead things off here. What's going on, Mark?
Yo, what's up, fellas? How y'all feeling? Can y'all hear me?
What's up, Mark? Got you loud and clear.
Hey, listen, man. So I wanted to do some spring cleaning, right? So this particular person that I want to do, that's the top of my list, trumps my list. He's been on my list since last year, spring cleaning. is Jim Swartz. And it's a lot of Eagles talk, you know, talking about, you know, certain moves they're making and mm-hmm. who they're thinking about drafting. But I think none of it matters until you fire Jim Swartz. I really don't understand why he still has his job, and particularly why, because, you know, at any position, as far as any field, teacher, coach, whatever, if all your students are failing, like, he's never had a successful cornerback, and they drafted plenty of them. And I think they gave him talented cornerbacks. It's just that he's asking them to do something that they completely have never done, and not putting guys in position. And even if you think that he is, then my explanation to say that, or my counter to say that, is if you look at how many mediocre quarterbacks have torches ever since Brady put up 500 in the Super Bowl, every mediocre quarterback has torched us. And I honestly think that we were lucky that we didn't see a superior quarterback before we seen Brady, or we might not have made it to the Super Bowl.
Interesting. No, well, listen, Mark, that Jim Schwartz for a lot of people is right there with you in terms of what is he still doing
here. A number one.
Giving
yeah.
up to 33 in the Super Bowl, 500-plus yards from Brady, the issues over the last couple of seasons with the defense, and giving up just big days. And as you just said, mediocre quarterbacks having career nights against them, or career afternoons, and you're absolutely right there. The other thing I would say is, as much as I may like someone like Jalen Mills or whoever other corner it might be,
Avante Maddox,
I've always, Mark, wanted an upgrade, and all you continue to hear is those are his types of players, and I don't know how much he has to do with the drafting, but you have to believe that he has a conversation with Howie Roseman with the type of players that he likes.
But it's just like, you know, if we're moving forward, because right now it's just like if you look at Sidney Jones, for example, he made two big plays in two consecutive games, all because he played up on a man and didn't play 10 yards off. Like, more of that, the fact that they don't even know how to blitz. Like, they disguise blitz or don't disguise blitz. It's like, him still being in that position. You can put as many weapons out as you want out there with Carson. They have to average 30 points again, like they did in that Super Bowl run. Or if not, it's just because when you look at, you can't even expect what was the quarterback from the Redskins? They put that rookie in. He had
Dwayne Haskins. Yeah.
Like, all of these mediocre. It's not the, when you talk about Brady and Breeze, that's okay, you understand that. But the mediocre talented quarterbacks that come off of weeks and of doing nothing, I think he's getting by because he has a Fletcher Cox and he has other different talent on the defensive line. And most of the time on the defensive line, that's what happened. The talent takes over and you don't have to do that much coaching. But on the back end is where the coaching comes. It's no different than scheme. I mean, we all know when week one comes, we know exactly what style of defense we're going to see out there.
Yeah.
Single high safety. And then you put Rodney McLeod out there by himself to run sideline to sideline after he just came off of ACL tear.
Yeah.
So I just don't understand what they're seeing to say, okay, we're going to keep this guy and keep blaming it on the corner. So now you're going to replace all the cornerbacks?
Well, Mark, thanks for the phone call. Maybe they'll look into that for spring cleaning, but short answer, yeah. I mean, they might be replacing that whole secondary. You're literally talking about safeties all over the place. Don't forget, Malcolm Jenkins has already said, if this is the deal, I'm not playing. He's already said that. I don't get the inclination that they wanted to bring back Rodney McLeod to begin with this year, or for this upcoming year. So you're talking about big-time personnel changes.
Big-time personnel changes in both free agent corners.
Yep.
So are you going to go with Maddox and Douglas on the outside, Sidney Jones as well, and Cravon LeBlanc, who you are a fan of?
I love Cray.
He did well at the end when he came back.
Yes.
But not well enough.
Not well enough.
No.
Not well enough to stop me from addressing that position. Let me put it that way.
And I've been wanting to address it for the last couple of years, and I hope they do again this offseason, whether it's Jones that everyone talks about and we'll all get frustrated with the amount of money that he gets, they need an upgrade.
Yeah.
And we don't know that they can find that guy in the draft either. So who am I to get mad when they give Jones money when they can't identify the ones in the draft that they're supposed to? And I hope that we do the draft like we have for the last two seasons so we can sit there and go crazy when they do something ridiculous that we don't like.
Draft a Pac-12 wide receiver. It's about 6 feet tall.
Over
about 180 pounds.
Over the other guy.
Yeah, no burst.
Yeah. Who has burst.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Looks like a action figure.
Man, oh man.
and torch them in the playoff game.
Yikes. That is the truth, man. 610-632-0975. DK Metcalf's what it looks like when you give Nelson Aguilar like the super soldier serum, you know? Just like puff, and he comes out of the capsule like Captain America. That's DK Metcalf.
That's when
right
you
there.
Just keep pressing up on the button on Madden. When
more!
You create a player. You go from like 67 to 99. Oh, there it is.
You find the like you're trying to pick muscle tone and you go over so far that you found the hidden menu.
Yep.
And you know, that's where it is, right there. Let's go to Tito. Ben Salem next on The Fanatic. What's up, Tito? Tito, you with us? All right. I'm going to put Tito on for a quick breather.
Yeah.
Yeah, so DK eats you alive. Terry McLaurin eats you alive twice. That's probably the one that has me the angriest that nobody talks about. Like, Terry McLaurin
because
twice.
He plays for Washington.
Right, exactly.
But he got you in the game one, and then he got you again later on in the season.
Dude, you had the whole season to think about how he got you game one.
He almost lost to them because they missed him a couple of times.
They did. If they hit him one more time, it's another touchdown.
Game one, for sure.
Ooh.
Game one, for sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Man, oh man.
Yep.
So here we go. Some tweets regarding the process. Teeny7940 tweets in.
Okay.
We had a good team last year, and they were all traded away. Last year's team was destined to go deeper into the playoffs this year if they were healthy. Trading Jimmy and JJ away is what stands out the most to me. They weren't traded, but, I mean, they did leave. All I know is if I have Brett Brown as my coach, I'm not blaming Elton Brand for this. This is like a organizational kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
If I have Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and Brett Brown, and those are my pieces, and it's a Brett Brown coach team, Jimmy and JJ look more like what I want. That's why I need more information. I need to know more about the Jimmy Butler situation. I need to know if there was any way that he was going to come back at all, or if it was one of those things where he said, yeah, this isn't going to be it, so they had to do what they could to get a starter in Josh Richardson for him. I don't know. I'm not sure. But, you can't have anticipated that JJ was going to get the money that he got from New Orleans.
I did not see that one coming.
Yeah. No, I don't think anybody could.
Especially from New Orleans.
Right.
I just
yeah.
didn't see that coming.
Yeah. But it's worked out for him.
And he had to take it. How long was he going to wait?
Right. Yeah, for a deal like that.
I mean, he was the first guy off the board, right?
Yes. The pecking order was Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris, and then J.J. Redick. How long was he going to wait?
Yeah, he can't wait for...
Right.
Yeah.
You saw how long everything took to come together. How can he pass that money up?
610-632-0975. Let's get Tito in before the breather. Yes. What's up, Tito?
Hey, guys.
What's going on?
I thought about that before. You know, I called and talked to you guys, I think, the eve of the NBA season there, and I just said, I'm not drinking the red, white, and blue Kool-Aid. And you guys said, you know, things are looking good here, but I think you bring up a lot of good points tonight, but the thing that hasn't changed is the coaching.
Yes.
You know, you look at Toronto, what they did last year. Do they have as much talent as the Sixers? No. Does Milwaukee have as much? You know, Giannis is great, but it's not the same thing. And I think with Philadelphia, we always look to put a new piece in there, but we don't really do little things better. And that still has not changed, and I think that has to come back to coaching. So when are we going to make a change? When are we going to try to get somebody that's going to do different?
I'm a big Atlanta fan. If they don't get to the NBA Finals, Tito, I think that will happen.
Yeah. I'm a big Atlanta fan. I when we got Budenholzer down there, I thought, oh, we got the right one.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of people made fun, but, you know, that guy had nothing there. And now look what he does with Milwaukee and just, you know, Brett Brown. I don't dislike the guy. And, you know, he has periods of good, but too many games left on the table that they should win, that they don't win. You know, there's winnable games that they're just not getting it done. And they don't do little things better. They're not Alabama Crimson Tide. They got to do things to just make their program better, and we're looking to just interchange pieces. And everybody's excited, Horford and Josh Richardson, but I don't know. Something's just not there. It's not happening. I don't see it going anywhere, even with the talent that they have at the coaching at the helm the way it is. I don't know. What do you think?
Tito, I mean, you're joining that club, man. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. I think that there's a lot of people that think that they're being held back by the coaching. I'm not going to battle with you on that. I will say, though, that I like both Milwaukee's and Toronto's talent last year relative to the Sixers. I like Toronto's roster relative to the Sixers last year, which is why it's so frustrating that they had them on the ropes and they could have knocked them out.
Seize your opportunity.
Yeah.
And they did not.
Didn't do it.
Yeah. Same thing with even Boston. You were the hot team and you were playing well and you could not figure out their defense. You had a bad playoff from Robert Covington.
Yep, that hurt.
Simmons didn't play well. J.J. Redick couldn't shoot. Bellinelli, Ilyasova couldn't shoot.
Simmons didn't have the counterpunch at that point. Like, once they were going to take away...
Nah, when they put that picket fence up.
Yeah, like, what is he going to do?
Yeah.
Didn't have the counter. That hurt.
And at the end of the day, when things don't work out, you see what's going to happen, and that's going to be the head coach. Look at what happened in Brooklyn over the weekend.
Yep.
Stunned. Saturday morning when I woke up.
There's
stunned.
Everybody trying to piece that together. Everybody.
Stunned.
The theory that I prefer... is that Kyrie just texted him at like 3:47 a.m. and was like, hey, you don't think that this solar system's like real, do you? And he's just like, I'm done. That's it. I'm out. Like
that'll do it.
That just one too many 4 a.m. text from Kyrie Irving as he's just like looking out a window. I prefer to think that that's what it is, but I assume that it's something else. 610-632-0975. Final segment for us together coming your way next on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Devon Gibbons, Joe Torti, 97.5, The Fanatic. Final segment for us together. Devon will carry you until midnight. Josh Rabick is producing. We were doing some spring cleaning earlier today and just like, picking out the things that you want to get rid of. Anything on the forefront of your mind? Things that you'd want to, you know, now that the weather's taking a turn for the better?
Yes.
You want to move on from?
Spring clean with free agency getting underway in the NFL, the draft right behind. I'm with our caller in a sense where I want to spring clean and I want new cornerbacks for the Philadelphia Eagles.
All new corners.
All new corners. Listen, you can have guys there. I'm okay with some coming back. But I need some starters out there, Joe.
So,
I need some guys that I can feel comfortable with on the outside and the inside, for that matter, as a slot corner because we know how many times offenses go with three wide receiver sets. I need that.
If they sign two and draft one, are you okay?
Is that too many? You know what I'm saying? So I would probably be okay with LeBlanc, possibly.
Apparently they liked him on the outside.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Now, we don't know because we have not seen him fully healthy yet, and we have no idea.
Right.
But look at what they were working with for him to be elevated to the outside.
You speak the truth.
Give me some competition.
Okay.
First of all, when someone's coming in, free agent-wise, big name like Jones or maybe Bradbury or something, they're on the outside.
Oh, yeah, they got to be.
There's no competition there. He's out there. Who's filling that other spot?
Who was that corner from TCU that everybody wanted the Eagles to sign who played for San Diego? Oh, my God. Jason Verrett?
Oh, yeah.
No way.
No.
Like, you can't pay that guy big-time money and then have him come play the slot. Like that's the whole issue with Chris Harris. Like, if you're going to pay Chris Harris, he is an elite-level slot corner and, like, a decent outside corner. Are you going to give that guy, like, mega outside corner money, and then you say you want to play him in the slot, but maybe he won't play that? Like, I don't know. That's tough. You got to pay the outside guys. You're right about that.
Yeah, I want the outside guys. What was yours?
For me, the big one that I had was the Tobias Harris contract.
I want to
sweep that away. I can't clean that out. That is one that I would leave by the curve. And I said this earlier. I wanted to get your thoughts on this, D. Cost effectiveness, like relative to what you're getting money-wise, I actually don't think that the Sixers have very many better contracts than the Furkan Korkmaz contract for what you get from the guy. Mm-hmm. You have like a $3.3 million deal over 2 years for a guy who like maybe can give you 12 points on 4 or 6 shooting from three when he's hot versus what you've seen from like the Al Horford contract. And I'm not going to say the Tobias Harris contract right now has been awful because he's been a contributing piece for you and he's stepped up big in a couple of games here. Al Horford's had big games when the other teams haven't been playing centers. Like, I haven't seen him like really beat up a center. I don't need to see him beating up on Marquise Chris and Drogon Bender and like these. Like I don't need that. Like that doesn't convince me.
Even if it gives him confidence against those other players that we see going forward. Now it's not going to be there on Wednesday either because they're playing Detroit with Christian Wood, who has been playing better.
Mm-hmm.
But he's Christian Wood. Saturday it is
your favorite player in the NBA.
Yeah,
him and John Wall.
Right. Saturday it is the Indiana Pacers.
Yep.
In town. So
yeah.
There you go. Whether it's going to be Sabonis or Miles Turner, he's going to have his work cut out for him.
For sure. I mean, I just look at the... Look, Anthony Davis is probably playing as well as anybody else in the NBA right now, but like...
And he gave him work.
Got 8 points. Al Horford got 8 points and got worked.
Montrezl Harrell.
Yeah.
Gave him work.
That's what I'm saying.
Him and Kyle O'Quinn. Gave him all the business.
That's right. What are you getting into tonight, Dave?
Well, we can continue with some of this Sixers conversation that where you were talking about. I haven't been on the air since when I was doing the pregame show Saturday. They cannot lose to the Golden State Warriors.
Oh, that's right. I remember you saying
that. They lost to the Golden State Warriors. So we can get into that a little bit. Washington and Buffalo still in a shootout. So what does that mean for the Philadelphia Flyers tonight?
Okay, nice.
So we can jump into some of that stuff, and maybe we can even mess around with what we have with Yaron Weitzman talking about the rebuild in his book.
So I see that the Brewers are going to pay Christian Yelich until he is 50.
No, they're not.
They did a Bobby Bonilla thing, apparently, where there's a $4 million deferral for the next 20 years.
His agent did this?
I assume so.
Fantastic
work. That is tremendous work.
Fantastic work by him.
Yelich already got the deal, the big money, too. Like, he already got a good deal already.
He's covered. That is amazing. Great work.
I cannot believe that we saw another one of these things happen.
Great work.
That is outstanding work. Oh, my gosh.
Great work.
Josh, how do we find this? How do we get this kind of stuff? How do we get this? That's amazing. All right, so how does it work? 11 installments. Okay, so there's a buyout.
Mm-hmm.
If the $30 million in deferred money would be paid in 12 installments of $2.5 million each from July on July
first from 2031 to 2042. If it's not owed, he gets 11 installments of $2.3 million from 31 to 41 and a final payment of $2.3. Gosh. Mm. They're amazing, amazing deals.
Great work by the agent.
28 years old, you made an incredible choice for your future.
Great work.
That is just outstanding stuff. And if you're the agent, 20 years after Yelich is done playing, you're like, oh, yeah. That's awesome, guys. Thanks. Appreciate that. All right, Devon, this is fun, man. It's always way too fast.
Yeah, it is. Whenever we do always, this. Man. So I guess I'll see you on Friday, both of us?
Yeah, I think
you're
that
back?
We're both. Yes, I will be back.
Okay.
Back on Friday. Ivy League season is over. Mm-hmm. If you don't know Ivy League season, that's the ultimate back-to-back. You play Friday and Saturday for six straight weeks. It's awesome. But that's done. So, we'll be back on Friday, and I'll be looking forward to talking to all you guys next time. Josh, thanks a lot for taking care of me in the early portions of the show. And Devon, have a great show. I'll talk to you later, buddy.
Absolutely, man. Have a great night.
Joe Torti, Devon Givens, 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.